Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
All right, Kyle, welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work and our first ever part two episode of a rewatch. This time we're covering part two of Infinity War as we're hitting the midway point through Avenging April. How are you feeling?
Good. I feel extra special because I just got a personal welcome to this podcast.
Yeah, I don't want you to ever think that I'm not excited for you to be here, you know?
Well, thank you. Wow, I feel extra ready now.
You really hold this thing together. So I have been, it's so funny because like we said, we watched this movie. I've obviously seen this movie a ton anyway, but we watched it recently in preparation for this episode. And then we were recording and paused the recording whenever we finished our part one episode. And I really have been in this mode of like, oh gosh, I have to find out what happens in the rest of Infinity War.
As if we don't know yet.
It feels like that
sometimes.
It does.
Maybe it's going to turn out differently this time.
Right. I always wish. So we left off here. If you were listening to our part one, also, if you didn't listen to our part one, you should go back and listen to that. And if you are finding this podcast just now, what you could also do is go way back to our very first rewatch episode, which was Captain America: The First Avenger, and go through the entire rewatch with us. This is the culmination of that, but it's going to be a lot more fun if you've kind of been there for everything that's gone before. So this is picking up right where part one left off for us, which is when Thor and Rocket are approaching Nidavellir. Mm-hmm. And it is mysteriously dark.
You know what I think would be really fun? This just came to me right now. I think I'm going to make a Friends from Work director's commentary cut of this. So once these 2 weeks are released, I'll put them together, available for download strictly during the runtime of the movie. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'll cut out all this stuff and I'll just run it. That'd be kind of fun. So people can legit hit play on the movie and listen to us if they want to.
I would love it if at least one person did that. It would make me happy.
Release the Friends from Work cut. Hashtag release the Friends from Work cut. Comics joke there.
There you go. I love how we've skated around making fun of DC, but we've yet to just full on do it. One of these days.
Stop. I don't feel that way. I don't want to do that. If you're just joining us, fast forward to 1 hour, 14 minutes, and 40 seconds. It says Nidavellir on the screen. Robbie and I are going to hit play, and then we're going to go from there. So here we go. Ready? 3, 2, 1, play. And we're off. Welcome to Nidavellir, Rob.
Welcome.
So this first scene is kind of a key scene that I personally have missed in the past.
Yeah.
And so I kind of want you to explain its significance to our audience.
I love this scene because I think this is an example of Marcus and McFeely doing a few things at once. I think on the one hand, you find out that Nidavellir, which is one of the realms connected to Asgard, has been decimated because Asgard has not been there to protect it, which was Asgard's role. And that didn't happen because Loki took the throne at the end of Thor the Dark World.
Thor the Dark World. Here we go, baby.
So you find out that, again, that move really did have some serious consequences, even beyond what we talked about in Ragnarok, because now you're going to find out that this is what allowed Thanos to get the gauntlet, Kyle.
I know, and it's funny because we've made fun of that scene, and in so many ways, that scene is such a throwaway scene in my mind. But now in hindsight, you're bringing up all these things that are true. Ragnarok had tons of consequences, and here we are again. Asgard should be protecting this realm.
Right.
And they're not. So you're right.
And we got a bit of that in Ragnarok with Thor talking about how the realms were in chaos, but we just didn't really know what that would look like. But now we see what that looks like, and it's going to wind up having massive universal catastrophic consequences. The other thing that I think this scene gives us is just a hint into the malice and the cruelty of Thanos.
Right.
Because I think it's easy, and what makes him such a great villain is it is easy to view him sometimes as kind of wise and benevolent, more so than the normal villain.
Right,
and I don't think that that's necessarily wrong. Yeah, like I think that in those scenes, especially the scenes between him and Gamora, you know. But here, he's not driven by his sense of destiny necessarily in the same way, right?
No.
Like he doesn't kill half the dwarves. He maims Eitri, and then he kills every other dwarf, ostensibly just because he can.
It's kind of crazy because I've always thought that was also another kind of, not throwaway scene, but a scene that I've just kind of glossed over because Thor himself, I feel it kind of glosses over Eitri, what he's saying. He kind of does that whole bit about everything you're saying, that they killed me and they took my hands and they killed everyone else. But then Thor just goes like, believe me, all hope is lost, but we can defeat Thanos, and kind of like changes the subject right away. But you're right. If you really actually analyze what he's saying, Thanos would have no reason to kill everyone there, especially when he did what he asked, other than just being a douche. Like, he's cruel.
Right.
So,
you're
right. That is a good thing to point out, because I find myself sometimes almost, like you said, like almost, you know, feeling for him.
Right.
And then there's moments where you're like, okay, hold on. This guy's still kind of just angry and crazy.
And you can argue that, you know, he wanted to make sure no one else could get a gauntlet like that. And so that was why maybe he disabled the forge. But again, the way that he went about that, you see that there's more than just utility behind it.
Yep. I think so much of that is because a lot of what we see of Thanos is not that cruel. What we actually see on screen is not that cruel until like the endgame version of him, right?
Right.
But you get lots of references that you can miss, because there's even the line earlier in part one we were talking about. There's a line where he says, like, he's a plague, Tony. He invades planets. He takes what he wants. As if, like, even before his quote-unquote destiny or mission, he was still just invading planets and decimating them just because. So,
well, yeah, and like what you've said before with Nebula, where we found out in Guardians 2, you know, every time she would lose a fight, he would take out a piece of her and replace it with something else. You know, it's like these hints that you get from other people that he can be just truly evil.
Right. Okay, so now we're getting to one of the most fun scenes for me. It's the establishing of the team on Titan. So the Guardians are just now meeting some of the Avengers, Spider-Man, Iron Man, and Doctor Strange for the first time ever. And this whole fight sequence is fun to see. And the jokes we get, the pop culture references, all of that is so fun. And again, because Peter Quill missed the 90s and 2000s, it's kind of fun to see that juxtaposed to Spider-Man, who's so young that his references are pretty much, you know, 2000s and that's it. So, this whole thing for me is just so fun. Again, this is my dream come true on camera. I get to see all these characters finally starting to meet.
Oh, yeah. And these characters together are so fun.
Yeah. And We get my most quoted line ever, by the way, in the MCU. You know what it is? Why is Gamora? That's the line
that's
I say
Candace's
the most.
Favorite too.
Yes. I want to tell you, I'll do you one more. Why is Gamora?
Which I read, I think, it was an improv not from Dave Bautista, but from Chris Pratt.
Really?
I had read that he thought that would be a funny next line.
He was correct.
And
let me ask you this. Yeah, sorry, we're both watching. Sorry, yeah, there's some good jokes here. I love that. That's how he figures out he's from Earth. Yeah, Missouri, that's Earth.
What am I supposed to say, Jesus?
Yeah, this is just, this whole thing for me is fun.
Yeah, I also love the little look that we've gotten these really until Far From Home, these little kind of hints that he has a spider sense without them really speaking to it. Like, you know, the hair raising
but he
on
says
the
right
bus
there.
Scene. And then what he says there, like, what I'm trying to say is, I think something's coming.
Yeah, right. And then we get another one of my favorite lines in the whole movie right there, which is, you know Thor? Yeah. Tall guy, not that tough, needed saving.
The other line I love from that scene that I have to point out is whenever Iron Man has the huge gun pointed at Drax's face,
yes,
and Drax is like, don't worry, I can take it. No, you can't. He's right, you can't.
Man, no, he can't. I love that we now cut back to, again, just like we were talking about last episode, now you're wondering what's happening with Thor. We cut back to Thor again, and another unbelievable line that's so subtle is there. It's like this epic music, and the mold comes down, and Rocket goes, this is our plan, we're going to hit him with a brick? You know what I'm talking about? He goes, no, it's the mold. It's such a subtle
that
line.
That is a subtle line. That's good,
This
though.
Is our plan, we're going to hit him with a brick. So good. Right away, back to Titan.
Yep.
So this has always been a fascinating MCU discussion, I feel like. You ready for this?
Yeah.
And this gets really like kind of metaphysical to think about. But let's just say, you know, we don't know the full extent of the power of the Time Stone, right? So Doctor Strange goes forward in time, views 14 million, whatever, 65, I think is what it is, alternate realities.
Uh-huh.
First of all, what is he actually viewing of those? Because if he's watching 14 million, I mean, I guess he could pause it, but that's a lot of things to see.
Right,
how far back and how far forward can the Time Stone allow you to go? So like, I've always wondered, like at the end of the movie, when Thanos pauses and rewinds, right? Because the stone gets blown up. Like if he needed to, let's say they had destroyed the stone right away before the attack on Wakanda, could he have rewinded that far anyways? Or is it like a 5-minute window? I say that all to say, because it brings up some interesting thoughts. If Doctor Strange truly knows the one outcome that's going to happen, why go through with all this fighting and planning from his side of things?
Yeah.
It's just like a kind of metaphysical, but maybe he saw this exact thing and he knows I have to still try to fight to fulfill the one future. You know, it's just kind of a weird thing. Whenever you start messing with time travel, it gets kind of crazy to think about.
Well, I think a couple things. One, you know, I'm always so like, oh man, if they could have just gotten Vision Stone out in time, you know, without Scarlet Witch going back onto the field.
That's
then
what
maybe.
I mean. But could he have just rewound it all?
And I think so. Like, I don't think we have any indication that Time Stone would be limited in that way, especially with him using it here to look at all of these different futures. Like, I think that he could have done that. So I think that the reason, and that plays into the fact that, like, there's no way Doctor Strange could have used the Time Stone to just go, like, I think it's the whole idea of Thanos being inevitable. Like, if he just kept trying to go back and do it differently or kept trying to go back and somehow protect themselves, I think the idea is Thanos was always going to win unless, like, Tony survived and the Avengers were able to get back together in a certain way and do what they do in Endgame.
It just raises some interesting thoughts, though, because then why would Doctor Strange work so hard to get the gauntlet off the first time with Peter Quill? Or, like, why not stop Quill from punching Thanos so that they can get the gauntlet off? But I guess that was one of the failed scenarios he saw. if they actually let him do it. You know what I'm saying? It's
yeah.
This is how I like to think about it. And this, I have no, this is not based on any fact. Okay. But I almost wonder if like in having to go through 14 million things, he just gets more of like a glimpse of some of the key details, like the big picture. Like,
right.
It's easier for me to think about like, what if he didn't see every scene? He didn't see every detail like we're seeing.
Right.
But he just knew like, okay, Tony has to survive. I know that. And right. I know that I have to give him this stone and let him do it here if it's the expense of Tony's life. Like maybe that's right. kind of all he saw. I don't know. That makes me,
yeah.
or like just little details instead of knowing every single thing planned out.
I think that's
out.
Fair.
But
I think that's fair.
Okay, so fast forward to another key thing we got to talk about. This was one of my favorite Easter eggs in the entire
MCU.
This
reveal. Oh, well, you know, I love this.
Yeah, so we just got to Vormir at about an hour 25 into the movie. And I just thought when I saw this the first time, what a genius thing. Because you have to double take and say, is that Red Skull?
Yeah.
And
yeah, it is.
Cap, first Avenger,
baby.
But when I first saw it, I had to go back and do research online because I was like, wait a second, what happened to him in the first Avenger? I thought he died. But on this rewatch, you go back, you never see him die. You see him get like sucked into space, which makes sense with like the portal, you know, like the space stone. And now here he is. And I thought, what a fun way to do that. And instead of him, like, this is still fulfilling that urge that I want him to be like off the board as a character, right? Like I didn't want him to keep going, but this still fulfills that because he's like cursed to this destiny and I love it.
Yeah. I love it. And he's so perfect for it because he's kind of, he's creepy and dark and the German accent is fun.
His voice works perfect. Yes.
Yeah. And I think it's also fun to imagine, right? That like in Endgame, at some point, Cap would have come to Vormir to bring the Soul Stone back and would have would have had some kind of interaction with Red Skull.
I can't wait to talk about that whole thing, like theorize with you on Cap's journey in the time travel stuff, you know, like what that would have looked like. And we'll get there when we get to Endgame.
Yeah. But it is, this was, for me especially, this was the scene because there were a few characters like that we've always been like, are they just off the table? And I love that, again, everything matters. Everything matters, Kyle.
Yes. So I'm going to mess this up because I don't remember the exact names, but Grace, one of our listeners, brought up that right there, Red Skull says to everyone who walks up, he says, so-and-so, daughter or son of so-and-so and so-and-so, right? So he like gives their lineage, your lineage right there when they walk up.
Right.
And it's kind of slightly interesting that right there he says, Gamora, daughter of Thanos.
Right.
Because she's not technically the daughter of Thanos, like biologically. That does raise an interesting thought because it appears that everybody else is getting like their biological parents listed.
Yeah.
I don't have an answer to that, but I just found that interesting. Could have been an oversight or maybe it's something deeper than I'm even thinking.
I don't think it would have been an oversight. I think that, I don't know. I think that it's supposed to be something maybe more spiritual or symbolic.
Yeah. Well, it definitely sets up what's about to happen more, you know, effectively.
right.
By saying that. This is another spot I wanted to pause and say, man, this is another time when the score just marries so perfectly with what we're seeing on screen. You get this amazing tension and drama of the tears, you know, and just the acting from Gamora here when she first says, like she starts laughing and she's almost like she's won. And then this look on her face when she starts realizing what's maybe about to happen. Then dude, the subtlety and the genius of her quickly grabbing the knife, not to kill him, but to kill herself there. So selfless. Oh my gosh. But as she's doing all this, the music's starting to pick up here for this Even For You is what the song is called on the soundtrack.
One of my favorite tracks. Yeah.
So good. And again, this Even For You song, if you want to go look it up, has always kind of bothered me again because it's kind of almost happy.
Yeah.
Like there's parts of it that sound like fulfilling.
Yeah.
That's what's so good about Alan Silvestri here. none of this feels just like straight up evil or like this is a dark scene, but it doesn't just feel dark. It feels sad, but also kind of like, I have to do it. I'm achieving something. And I'm like, what am I watching? He doesn't have to.
I want to raise this now because I want to circle back here in Endgame. For whatever reason, this scene, something about the pacing of it, I don't know, and I'd be curious to see him side by side, is so emotional and hits so hard for me in a way that the Black Widow scene doesn't hit quite as well for me.
Really?
And I'm not sure why that is, but I've always felt for whatever, like, this feels like the climax of this movie in some ways, like, where it's
careful. I got a scene coming up.
for Thanos, right? Like, this big moment for his journey.
It's like the emotional pinnacle, at least for now.
Yeah. And I guess it just, I'm curious to watch the Black Widow scene and kind of compare and contrast those.
I think I get it because of Hawkeye's reaction. Up until that point, I think I don't feel that as much. And part of that maybe because in Endgame, they're kind of joking around a little bit first, you know? Whereas this scene we're watching now is totally serious the whole time. But I still think I feel it because of what happens with Hawkeye, that shot of him hanging on the cliff, for me, does it.
Right.
But anyways, now we fast forward and we're catching back up with Wakanda. And again, a couple of my favorite jokes. What an underrated, funny movie. Like, there's some good
it's
humor
a funny
still.
Movie.
But the when you said we're going to open up Wakanda to the world, I thought maybe there'd be like a Starbucks or the Olympics. That's an amazing line. And then I love how Don Cheadle here pranks Bruce into bowing. It's amazing. What are you doing? No, we don't do that here. Yeah, he's a king. You have to bow. So good.
Gosh.
Yeah, that fake bow is going to happen right here. And T'Challa kind of smiles too a little bit, I think.
Right. I love the Wakanda team.
Yeah. When I think of Infinity War, this is actually what I think of. I always think of the Wakanda battle. I know there's so much that's happening on Titan, and there's so much that's happening on Nidavellir and in space, and all that's amazing. I'm not belittling it. But like the first thought that comes to my mind is like them charging in Wakanda. That's what always comes to my mind when I think of Infinity War.
So,
you're smiling. You're smiling for the same reason. I think we're about to say the same thing. Can I say it? Because I've always
you should say
it. Okay. This is perfect. Oh my gosh, I can't believe we're having this revelation both live on a podcast doing this rewatch. Here's my thing. You know this.
Yeah.
I've always been extra sensitive. I think we're going the same place here. I've always been extra sensitive towards my main Avengers and my characters. And I've said this on this podcast so many times. Whenever something kind of like threatens that or like makes light of something that they fail at or something, I get a little bit like on edge and sensitive about it.
Right.
I've been told for like a bunch of movies now that Tony and Bruce are some of the smartest people in the entire like galaxy. Even Thanos, Thanos of all people, when he sees Tony Stark says like he knows him. And says, you weren't the only one cursed with knowledge, like implying he knows you, you're so smart.
Right.
Right? And so it's subtle. But I just don't love when they make the joke about like Shuri like saying like, why didn't you do this? And they all kind of look as like, oh, because you're smarter than us and we're all dumb. I get it. Right. It's a fun, tiny little thing. But don't try to belittle their work and their tech with like a joke from your tech. Congratulations. That's what always makes me a little angry. Is that where you were going to go with that?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I knew that scene, you and I have talked about that scene before.
It's so subtle. Like it doesn't bother me that much, but that's just in the back of my mind.
The thing is, the reason it doesn't bother me as much is because Tony and Bruce have not had access to this vibranium tech, like what you're saying. So it's not this just like they're totally inept and she's like light years ahead. It's also just like, you know, they, to their credit, they're not gifted with this incredibly versatile, you know, like
The reason it doesn't bother me besides that too is that they may be unbelievably smart, but even in like Age of Ultron and in the first Avengers, Tony admits there's things that he doesn't know as well as other people. Like he'll say things like, this is not my field to Bruce.
Right.
Right. Like, so like something like this like might not fully be his. Yeah, exactly. He could just say this isn't my field 100%. So that's why it doesn't really bother me, but you're smiling just because like for a second I think that like, okay, easy, Shuri, back off. Don't you dare make fun of what they're working on here. They created Vision. They have a stone, okay? Just relax. Okay, but while we were arguing about that, we missed a few of my other favorite things. Evacuate the city, engage all defenses, and get this man a shield, which is so cool. And I want to point out something else I love about this entire thing that's about to happen. A way that the Avengers vastly differs from Star Wars, for example, is that Star Wars almost always has fights and battles on a grand scale, right? Because this is always like focusing on 6 to 10 individual special people.
Right.
So to make them like look like they're really, really fighting, it's often, I think of like the Circle Up scene, or I think of even the Circle Up scene in Age of Ultron. It's often more like zoomed in. You're seeing them take on like people, but you're not ever seeing what we're about to get in this movie, which is like a grand scale Wakanda army going against another like legit army. It feels very Star Wars-y in how they're dropping ships that have troops like space dogs.
Right.
But like just how they can now for the first time really ever have shots that are zoomed out to see the like epic proportion of how many people are fighting.
Yeah.
And the Avengers are just like a part of leading this. It's kind of actually something I've always craved. And I think that's why I like this so much. It's kind of why I joke about Scramble the Jets, remember, in Thor the Dark World?
Right.
Or Call the Military, though, is sometimes how I feel, because I'm like, if it ever gets bad enough, I'd love to see the Avengers leading still other people helping fight.
Right?
Like just sheer manpower. But anyways, so this is finally now the version of that. We're finally getting it.
Right. And I appreciate that they've made us wait for this kind of payoff, and then again, you know, the battle we're going to get at the end of Endgame, I think, is that kind of on the ultimate scale.
But I think that's why the visuals in these two movies were so shocking to me in a good way, because it was the first time I could even get a shot like that one we get of Cap facing the whole army zoomed out.
Right.
We never got stuff like that until this movie, really.
Right.
Oh, dude, it's all about to happen. This is where I get so excited again. And we talked about this in the last episode, but again, that Ibambe and Wakanda Forever stuff is again amazing because they were filming Black Panther at the exact same time.
Right.
And it's not like if you go back and rewatch Black Panther, they say Wakanda Forever, Ibambe that many times.
Right.
It wasn't like as significant of a thing as it is now in hindsight.
Right.
You're getting distracted. You're just straight watching, Robbie.
I'm loving the standoff right now, because this is like we have Steve and Nat and T'Challa right now, and they're kind of negotiating with the Black Order folks, and it's just so I love that those are the leaders that are sent forward. Like it's like those are the head of our forces. And then they go back, and then just like both sides are preparing for the battle. It is like what you're saying. It's the first kind of like classic battle scene that we're getting.
Can we talk about the irony of T'Challa saying, "All we have is dust and blood is all you'll have," and that's what he gets. They all turn to dust and the blood of the people that die. It's kind of brutal. But yeah, it's just like, I've always thought that line was so ironic as he says that. Cause it's like, ooh, T'Challa, careful what you wish for.
That is brutal.
Okay. I have so many details about this fight scene that I want to point out.
Yeah.
I think it's genius to include this part of the space dogs, crawling through and killing themselves. Because this is the first time we're getting not a noble type fight. Like even Ultron, I think, had like something to believe in. These creatures are just strictly like, this is like the Joker more, just strictly chaos. They're willing to just die to
get in and kill everybody. Outriders, is that what they're called?
I actually don't know, but I know they joke about space dogs, and that's actually what that came from the filming of the movie, that people offset start joking, calling them space dogs, and that's how that line made it in the film, which is kind of funny.
Oh, okay.
Get some space dogs. But you know what I mean? It shows how just like bloodthirsty and crazy they are.
Right.
To include, like, why else include this? I love that. You know, that they're still crawling through. Second detail I always wanted to point out, it always bothers me that Rhodey, when he drops the napalm right there and it's a huge explosion, I always want him to fly on the other side and do that. Think about how many of those things he could have killed if he was bombing them on the side where all the space dogs actually are. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, that's true. Well, but he
starts bombing right there. I know, but I'm just saying, if he saved that until they were all coming in, he would kill. And they do give me one shot of it. So he does do it when they start coming in. But still, I've always thought that was funny. Last thing I want to point out, this moment right here, even before I got the Thor entering Wakanda thing, this moment right here gives me as big of chills as any in the MCU. Not only Thor's entrance, but this start of this, the music that's playing in my ear right now, him yelling Wakanda forever, I just got chills right now. And charging, and there's the subtle detail that I love, like you pointed out. I love that it shows Black Panther and Captain America running out front at super speed, and that Captain catches up to Black Panther to get out front. That detail, that shot, alone gives me chills.
I love, like, that's one of the things I always zero in on. I love, like, I'm watching it right now, and then there's a leap there at the end. Yes.
Yeah, the leap, yes. And the subtle detail, bro, of the shout out to the Black Panther movie, I think, where the whole part of the whole point of Black Panther is that they're divided,
right?
You know, amongst the tribes. And yet here they are standing next to him, and Winston Duke says, "Of course, brother, that I'll be here." But then when he says, "This will be the end of Wakanda," I get chills. And they respond, "Then it'll be the noblest ending in history."
Yeah.
But my point is, it's fun to see how unified they are now, not that long after what they came from. It's like now he knows, like, this is going to be the end of us, but I'm going anyways. And that was a lot talking for me, but all of that brings me so much joy.
Well, which again makes me curious about what Black Panther 2 is going to show us about Wakanda after all of this that we've seen, right? Because like Black Panther did end Wakanda in such an interesting place. And it, like, watching Infinity War and Endgame just makes me really curious to see where they are at this point.
So we now flash back to Nidavellir, where Thor is holding open the iris for the mold to be.
Yeah.
And I want to bring this up. This is the scene you've always thrown back in my face whenever I've complained about somebody else's power levels, like when I complained about Hela, or when I complain about somebody else having too much power, Captain Marvel. You throw in the fact that Thor is now taking the full brunt of a star.
Of a star.
But here's what I throw back at you. He dies from it. Like, he can't fully take it, okay? So he needs the axe to save his life. So that's how I still kind of justify it, right? Like, here's a god. He's a demigod who is taking this for like a matter of 30 seconds, and then he actually dies, basically. You know? But I'm with you. I'm with you a little bit. It's
I mean, it is showing, though, that he is basically, like, invincible at that point. Like, I know that he's...
But he's dying.
He is dying, but normally anybody else would be, like, immediately vaporized.
That's true.
What I'm saying is just seeing Carol fly through some ships at light speed to me is not, like, more ridiculous than taking the full power of a star.
But I don't get to see Carol ever be vulnerable, and here I am seeing Thor about to die. At least I get to see the vulnerability of how he's going to die. Okay, anyways, we can't keep talking about that because we're getting the best scene ever in the MCU for me, which is this music starting to build up. And when the hammer or the axe finally gets made, you hear that bum, dum, and the lightning coming out of the axe as it rises. And so again, I think the assumption there is that the axe is actually healing him enough.
Right.
And so that's why I'm okay with it a little more. And then if you notice what they purposely set up, right, is, okay, now I'm going to go back and show, here's my shot I was talking about of him shooting all the people.
Gotcha, yeah.
But now they go back and want to reiterate, hey, look how bad things are on Earth so that when Thor shows up, see how everyone's getting beat right now?
Yep.
It's like this subtle, they need help, right? Because Cap's pinned, Hulk Buster suit's getting destroyed. There's too many of them, right? And then what do we need to answer? We need Thor, the God of Thunder, to come down and save us. And
I'm just going to
be silent for a second, because if you are watching this, I'm going to let you experience this moment for a second. Even if you're listening to the podcast, pretend you're watching it. Dee-dee-doo. Bomb, the main Avengers theme.
Oh, my gosh. Doo-doo-doo-doo.
And I'm going to talk about a subtle detail I love in 2 seconds when this is done. We're all going to just enjoy this for a second. Even if you're not watching, pretend you're watching. Bring me Thanos. Run, sub drop.
Yes.
And the lightning, dude, just coming out of everything, not just the axe, you know? Okay.
Jeez, what a scene.
I don't know that I talked about this in Ragnarok enough.
Also, what a transition, by the way.
Yeah, the lightning blue right into the portal into the
space stone.
Yeah.
Very cool.
In Ragnarok, when Thor has his moment of, what are you the god of again? One of my things that I love about that scene is there's a subtle shot after he strikes Hela with lightning of Loki smiling.
Right.
The first thing they show us after you see his power is that Loki, A, understands what's happening, and B, like with a smile, acknowledges like, again, this is the most powerful being I know. That's what that smile to me does. And there's something about that I love. Like Thor is the strongest and I like that. And that's why I think I get so adverse to anybody saying they're stronger, right? So that's why I bring that up in my head. But I do love how when he first shows up, the first thing they show us is Cap, Black Panther, and Hulk all with a look on their face of like, oh, like, thank you. He's finally here. It's like as if they're all acknowledging like, oh gosh, okay, now we're in good shape. And then hence Hulk even saying, Bruce, I guess, technically even saying, you're all so screwed now. That's just like a straight up not meta, just literal thing of what I'm feeling, right? Like, we just needed him here and we're good.
And I love that because Bruce thought that Thor was dead. And so everyone thought that Thor was dead until that moment. Yes. So like it's all the more surprising and
relieving.
Meaningful. Yeah. Whenever he shows up and has Rocket and Groot.
We've had this discussion so many times. You can go back and listen to our Power Rankings episode, one of the first ones we ever did. We argued about what's the most chill-inducing scene in the MCU. And it's really hard for me. I think I'm realizing that even amongst just quote-unquote chills, there are different kinds of chills almost. Like Portals is chills to the max, and that's why it won when our fan vote, you know?
Right.
But for me, that's more of like a fulfilling, almost sad to see it ending, like relieved type chills.
Right.
Whereas like Thor, God of Hammers, is just straight up like I have like an adrenaline rush from seeing him become so strong and powerful. And this is like somewhere in between there. You know, there's just almost, it's so hard for me to rank because there's this different kinds of chills.
Right.
Fast forward now, we are finally getting the fight on Titan, which is up there with Wakanda as one of my favorite fights ever. Totally different. This is that smaller scale one-on-one type stuff. But how fun is it to see all these powers mixed up, right? To see the Cloak of Levitation grabbing his hand. To see Doctor Strange opening portals for Spider-Man to kick Thanos. Like magic. And then, again, to reiterate people who think that Spider-Man's losing his quippiness, he's even there joking. Yeah. Magic with a kick. Magic with a punch. Like, he's still doing his one-linerness. There's so many things I want to point about this, too. But it's just this is basically Avengers porn for me to just see.
Right.
All of my heroes fighting together and how they all can interact and how their powers can help balance this, you know?
And I like the way that they show us, because on paper, they shouldn't be able to put up any kind of fight, right? Because he has all of these Infinity Stones. But it shows how they're keeping the gauntlet at bay here and
yes.
there, you know, which I think is important.
The first like three times I watched it, I just thought they were just fighting him. I know that sounds right. lame, but I thought they're fighting him. On like rewatches, you realize how every move they're doing, like even Doctor Strange here,
yep.
is targeted towards not letting him close his hand and use the stones.
Right.
Tony's got devices built to keep his hand open. Spider-Man's pulling at his hand to keep it open. Doctor yep. Strange launches to keep his hand open. You know, it's like, it really is a very like dedicated. And again, that comes from the joke about the plan, remember, with Tony right. Stark. But in his plan, he says like, just get the gauntlet. Don't let him, you know,
right.
we don't want to dance with this guy. Meaning like, don't just try to fight him kind of thing. So it is very like, yeah, it's very specific in how they're fighting.
So this scene,
which is
we got to talk about this moment now where they have Thanos incapacitated to some degree, and we have right. Quill fly in.
This scene hurts me so much in so many ways.
Oh man,
hurts me so much, and this is why I start thinking about, did Doctor Strange know this was going to happen? Because this is so painful. Like, it seems so close. Like, someone just grab Quill and, like, physically tackle him so he can't, you know, lose his cool. But at the same yeah. time, I don't blame the writing of Star-Lord, because it makes sense. Of all characters, he, of all people, would get emotional
oh, yeah.
and probably
yeah,
would lose yeah. his cool a little bit here. He would be so heartbroken about Gamora. So it's believable. I just don't like it.
Right.
It makes me so sad because it really seems like they're close, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that. Oh gosh, don't engage. We almost got this off. Also, I mean, the RDJ music. Performance in this scene.
Yeah. And then the music starts and it's kind of sad.
But what I always wonder is, so let's say they do get it off here.
Yes.
I think the idea is like, well, then what are they going to do with the stones? Like at this
okay,
point, they...
The first thought is that at least he doesn't have them. So now sure. we can just like fight him. Second thought would be, I would guess that somebody would try to put it on. Like Peter Quill would have the knowledge of what the Power Stone can do, right? Because he held right. it himself. So my guess would be they would want to try to use it to do the same thing they did against Ronan.
Right. But what we've seen is that nobody else can wield it. You know, yeah.
Yeah, he wouldn't hold it. And Iron Man arguably wouldn't have the tech at this current moment
right,
to
right.
be able to survive. He might like vaporize instantly, you know?
And so that's why I always think, you know, you can get into what Doctor Strange was thinking and what his motives were during this whole thing. But whenever it's like there could only be one way, I have to think a lot of that is for them. Like, I have to think that a lot of that meant them losing here, but Tony surviving.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I like to think of it more that way.
Yeah.
Because like he didn't know how he was going to lose, and he didn't know Peter Quill was going to speak up right there. That's what I like right. to think. But that he knew they'd probably lose here, but I have to keep Tony alive, even at the expense of the stones. That's all he maybe right. saw, you know?
Right.
There's two other things I wanted to point out about that. That whole scene we just watched on Titan is kind of my anti-power levels thing. I have to a little bit suspend belief of like what can kill people, what can't. And I start justifying it by saying, okay, look, like Kyle Cousins brought up, when Nebula drives the spaceship into him, we're just meant right. to believe, look, Thanos can't be beat. That's I think the point of all of it is like, he can't physically be like hammered into submission by right. any other being. That's how I justify it. But even things like that giant asteroid crushing Tony on the ground, it right. a little bit bothers me that wouldn't hurt him even more. So
right.
there's just a few power level questions I've always had there. That's the first thing I wanted to say about that scene. The second thing that I think is so notable is we just got 10 minutes of some of the coolest visual effects I've ever seen in a movie to visualize that entire fight. I remember
oh,
when
yeah.
I saw the scene
like
of
the
Thanos
reality stone stuff.
Well, Thanos pulling the moon down
oh,
was in
yeah.
the trailer, or it was in like a little bit of the part they released at the D23 conference before this movie came
right.
out. And I remember people just losing their minds. Thanos right. literally throws a moon at Tony, is what it said. But just the depiction of all of that, Doctor Strange's powers, the moon coming down, like yeah. all of that just looks unbelievable. Like, I don't know that that will age poorly ever.
Right.
It's very cool. And so shout out to the team. I mean, there's literally 10,000 people that had to work on this movie. It's like, shout out to them working on this.
Yeah. I think to your point about him being, you know, him being able to survive Nebula crashing the ship down. I have seen statements from the Russos where, and again, you know, however much weight you want to give to this, but they've said that you should essentially understand his skin as being largely indestructible, which is why I think we get that big moment here in a second where Tony basically goes all out on him and you get barely a nick, you know? So I think
that's one of those moments when we get that moment where, as a viewer, I remember being like, oh gosh, like I feel hopeless. Like that's the point of those scenes, right. I think. He literally says to me as like a viewer, all of that for a drop of blood. And again, it's everything Tony's been working toward for 10 yeah. years for a drop of blood. Yeah. And I think in that moment, that would probably be so defeating for Tony in that split second, I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like, okay, and again, oh, Robbie, that's why it inspires the Endgame rant.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I didn't fight him.
Yes.
I tried everything possible. It wasn't a fight. Who told you that? That's how he says
yeah.
it. Which I love so much. Who told you that?
Gosh, that scene.
Another thing I love as we're back in Wakanda now, right? Yeah. And for a long time, you know, they make the joke, which is one of the best lines in the whole film, about Wanda when she finally comes down. And again, to see Wanda's powers grow linearly every right. film is so cool.
It is.
That now yeah. we're seeing her like throw ships.
Right.
And they make the joke of, why was she up there this whole time? Which is such a funny line.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you would have, you know, needed her down here. But I love the subtlety of the plot being that
yeah.
the Order had already fought her and they know how strong she is. So I love that scene of saying she's on the field as if like that was the plan the whole time.
Right.
Do enough fighting to where she is not protecting Vision anymore because we yep. can't really beat her very easily or at all, and then go get the stone. I know yep. that's obvious, but that's a great addition to this.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's good storytelling.
And it puts Wanda in such a bind because if Captain America and Black Panther had known that was the plan, would they have still had her camp up there the whole time despite Wanda having to sit there and watch her friends die?
Right.
You know, because she came down to save him, right? Because of the ships. That's right. What she wanted to do. But again, it puts her, she's in such an awkward bind in this movie the whole time.
Well, and I love this scene here. One, I love the Hulk interaction that we just got.
First time we've ever seen Hulk talk to Bruce Banner directly, by the way.
Right, right. Which is crazy.
Yep.
And that will tell us a lot about what's happening in Endgame next time we see Hulk. But I also love, you know, I love when Cap comes into the rescue and him coming yes. here to save Vision again.
And there's so many good parallels to his first movie. It's not direct. It's not an Easter egg.
Yeah.
But the parallel of him saying like, get out of here, go. Kind of like falling yeah. on the grenade, like back off.
Yeah.
And that Cap doesn't leave people behind. That line for Vision's good. That he's yep. going to still fight for Vision to survive. Cap's the one there. There's just a lot of parallels there that are just so fun. So fulfilling if you know his character.
I just, for what I always love getting from Cap is that at the end of the day, like, yes, you know, you see him out there running with T'Challa and they're the fastest and he's definitely physically, you know, he has the prowess. But at the end of the day, he is still just a guy, you know? Like, he's not Thor. He's not Doctor Strange. He's not even Spider-Man, really. And he's fighting these alien beings. And it's just, there's something so inspiring about that to me that it's like, Cap's always the one that's going to show up. And,
Robbie, I was nervous when we did the podcast this way that I wouldn't have enough information to fill the time. And I can't keep up. I have so many things I can't keep up with right now with the movie. What do I do? I almost feel like I need to pause it for 1 second. I'm not going to do that. But I want to say,
we are back
yes.
on Titan.
Can we please also table the Hulk discussion? Because I want to talk about how this is another part of his trilogy. I do want to talk about that more.
Yeah.
So don't let me forget that at the end of this whole episode. Because there's a lot of other things I'm going to have to bring up. I also then love how this particular fight was envisioned between Doctor Strange and Thanos, that he gets a 1 second, like one-on-one, or like a 10 second one-on-one. But
right.
that just back and forth, that Doctor Strange and Tony both have enough power to stop the Power Stone. Like Doctor Strange does like the mirror thing to block it. And Tony has a shield that does technically stop it, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
And I have to just point out, I've told you this already, it makes me so happy that Thanos knows Tony Stark here.
Yep.
He has no reason to know him other than that Tony Stark, his like fame has grown across the galaxy. Which, to me, as a fan, is chillingly cool.
I love this one-on-one with Tony and Thanos.
I know, because it is so impressive what Tony has concocted. It is so impressive, but it's just a drop of blood. But like, it's impressive to see all the things he's come up with, you know?
Yeah.
How his suit's like regenerating, even from Thanos' punches.
Well, and just watching Tony just getting... It's like he's trying everything he has, and you just see him getting desperate.
Oh, yeah. He's like desperately trying to hang on. As his like shield and suit are regenerating, he's still shooting with his hand, bare hand. And okay, this for me was one of the most startling moments ever in like MCU history. And I love it so much. The music cuts. I have chills right now. So for those watching at home, the music cuts drastically to total silence. And again, doubling down on that theory of brutality, they leave like just the gasps of Tony Stark's breath and blood coming out of his mouth. And the unpredictability of this film is where the reason I loved it so much was so many reasons, but the unpredictability was such a big part of it for me. Cause I truly in the moment believed right here, Tony Stark is dying. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
There was never a thought in my mind that they're going to keep him alive. I thought this is the end of his character.
I did too.
And again, to what makes Thanos one of my favorite villains ever is when Tony Stark is dying, Thanos doesn't walk up, just chop off his head and laugh and walk away. He literally holds his head, says, "I hope they remember you." And like, when I'm done, half of Earth will still be alive, Stark. Like, you don't have to totally panic, is what he's trying to say. And it's just the messed upness of all that is amazing, you know?
Yep.
I could pause and talk about that scene forever, because when he got stabbed, it makes me feel so many things in my heart.
Well, in this moment now where Strange is giving up the time stone for Tony's life, which is literally the thing he said he would not do earlier in the movie.
Yep.
He said, if it comes down to saving you or him or the time stone, I will not hesitate to let you die.
Two tiny details that I love. I love that he pulls the stone from kind of out of the stars. If you notice it, they make it visually look like it's a star that comes to his fingers, which is just kind of fun. And so subtle, when he passes it to Thanos, his fingers are shaking. And I love whenever they remind us that Doctor Strange's hands still don't work right.
Yeah.
Come on, that's a tiny detail, but so good. That's the kind of stuff they don't miss. Marvel, you know?
Yeah.
Like they could have easily done that scene and you would never have noticed that his hands were normal, but to see the scars and see his hands like trembling, incredible.
And this line here from Quill, I think about all the time with this movie.
Did we lose that line? Did we just lose?
Yes.
Why do you think about it so much?
I just think it's because you're thinking that as a viewer, and it's just this moment like this. The timing, you know, we've talked over and over again about how you almost have to view this movie with Thanos as the protagonist, because any other Avengers film or MCU film, like, this is the moment when it's like, oh, wait, they're doing it. They're overcoming. Like, this is like, we thought that all hope was lost, but it turns out that they can win. But we're having an opposite journey right now. Right now, it's like, wait.
I know people are so tired of me saying this, because I've said a million times I didn't read comics, and this movie for me was 100% not spoiled. Like when I was in the theater, I had not read a single line. I had not read a single, I had no inclination. So imagine that's where you're at. I always say that,
right.
But that's where I was at. And that's why that line from Peter Quill is so effective for me, is because this whole last 15 minutes of the movie, I was trying to guess. I was like, oh, they're going to beat him here on Titan still.
Right.
Or like, they won't give him the Titan Stone. They'll like get away. And cause I know there's another Avengers movie. So they're not going to beat him yet. And then when he actually loses and Tony Stark gets stabbed, like that's why I think I was so bought in that Tony Stark could die here.
Right.
Oh, they actually maybe did just lose there. Then he comes to Earth and I'm like, okay, well maybe they'll stop him here. And they don't. Right. It's just like the genius of all this. It's like it kept going one step further than I thought it would ever go.
And this scene also just the way he comes in, the way it gets again really quiet whenever he first appears, the trees rustling.
It's creepy. And again, at this point, it's pointless. That's the point of this. It's pointless. Yeah. Every Avenger we've ever loved, the strongest people ever on Earth, are just getting tossed around like ragdolls, literally.
Yep. Yep. That punch to Black Panther.
And then, of course, and then Vision acknowledging what's happening. Like, yep. No, it's too late. It's done. We can't do anything about it. He's the one that would know, I feel like, you know?
And this scene, I think, is it's brutal, but it's so emotionally compelling.
Unbelievably good. And this is kind of why I always toss out Wanda as my counter Captain Marvel whenever I have this argument. Because Wanda, I haven't gotten that much screen time with, right? Wanda is unbelievably powerful, like as powerful as anyone we've ever seen.
Right.
And yet, for some reason, I don't feel Captain Marvel scenes and this tiny scene. We've only had one shot of Vision and Wanda like being a couple.
Right.
Right? We've had like a total of 10 minutes of screen time of them together.
Right.
And yet this scene, I feel more than anything I've ever felt with her. Like for some reason, this moves me like crazy. And if you're not watching, it's when she's finally pulling the stone out of Vision's head to blow it up. But I think there's a genius part of this too.
And the music here is also,
the music is now louder than any sound effect. Almost feels like a dream. It kind of makes like what's happening to them feel fake almost. Like this can't be happening, you know? Because the music is so loud. And I think it's genius that while she's destroying this stone, it shows us all the rest of the Avengers still losing, you know? Kind of realizing it. But the visual of this too. And then, Robbie, talk about this, please. Please
this is me. This is classic Cap. This is what I want from the MCU, Kyle, because he is so hopelessly outmatched. Like we saw Doctor Strange and all the Guardians and Iron Man all going after Thanos. And now Steve Rogers, the kid from Brooklyn, is going one-on-one, hand-to-hand with him right now, trying to hold the gauntlet open. And it's just, and then just that brutal punch.
Yeah, oh, so brutal.
Gosh.
This is all in slow motion, though. So a subtle detail that I love is like Cap probably actually only held Thanos' hand open for like a total of 2 seconds in real life. But he's still going to do it. That's how hopelessly outmatched he is.
But you know what I also love in that moment is that look in Thanos' eyes for a second when he realizes that Cap is actually kind of holding his hand open.
Yeah.
Because you know at first he's like, oh, what is this guy going to do? And then for a second there, he's like, oh.
I feel like Thanos for 1 second is saying to himself like, oh, I realize, like, I like this guy's will. You know what I mean? Like, he like resonates with his like drive for a second.
Right, right.
Like, oh, like I respect this, like that this guy's actually holding my hand open. You know?
I think it says so much that Tony's last stand in this is him throwing everything he has, like all of his gadgets, all of his gear. And Steve's is just pure.
His hands are catching another hand, and that's it.
It's just like will, like what you're saying. It's just like resolve.
Yep. Oh, that's a good detail I'd never thought about. It's very intentional, it feels like, to have those two be the last shots for those two guys.
Right.
So that music climaxes all the way to that stone breaking, and I love the detail of Thanos comforting Wanda.
Right.
And then I've always loved one facial expression that Josh Brolin does here that I think goes unnoticed. I love that when she says, you could never like know my pain, he almost does like an eye roll where he's like so mad that people don't resonate with his Like that, like he was trying to like comfort her is what he's right. thinking. And then she still like lashes back, kind of like Gamora was. And he like gives this like, oh, like you, I know your pain, but no one feels me. You know, it's right. like what that look says to me, which I love. Right. And then he follows it up with just one of the most, again, another act of just sheer brutality.
Yeah.
Instead of like, they've been spending all this time trying to get the stone out of his head carefully. And here yeah. he comes up to Vision, walks up and just literally rips it out of his dead yeah. corpse.
Well, yeah. I mean, the way that Wanda destroyed it was still, there was some grace to it, you know?
It was like and
the
eloquent, way that, yes.
Yeah.
And then Vision turning instantly like bluish pale and just yeah. shut off, done, you know? Oh, and then this is and where then, this is. I said this 100 times, but this is where I thought the movie actually was going to end.
Yeah.
That after all of that, Thor was going to kill him right here, and that was the end. I'm serious. I thought he's yeah. going to do it after because it's like because I thought again it's oh, yeah. Thor's journey.
There's an axe in his chest.
There's an axe in his chest, but Thor's arrogance yep. gets in the way. Thor, it, like we said, oh my gosh, you know how the running joke is that bad guys always talk and they give a yeah. monologue yeah. right before they kill someone, and it always like allows James Bond to get away.
Right. Right. Right.
Here is all of a sudden, quote unquote, the bad guy, Thor, having to give his monologue instead of just defeating him. It's his right. arrogance. He has to rub it in and say, I told you I was going to do this. Just take it out, cut off his hand, then cut off his head, and you did it. Yep. Everyone's saved in the galaxy. But he still has not fully gotten over his stupid, like, revenge tour.
Yeah.
And it's not stupid. I'm joking. I feel for it. But, you know, it's just so good. And there's the snap. We just got to the snap, so
yeah. Oh,
but you know what I mean? It's just such a powerful conclusion to Thor's story there, I feel like, right?
No, oh, totally. Well, I think there it's really, I was thinking about this when he shows up on the field in Wakanda, and he shows up with such bravado and bluster, and it's what makes yep. it so exciting, right? You're like, oh, Thor's here. But what's interesting is, and everyone's thinking, oh, the strongest Avengers here, but that's not what it's going to take to beat Thanos.
Right.
Like, it's not going to take
brute strength.
Pure strength.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, this is Thor's last best chance at just, like, I am the strongest Avenger. I'm going to do this. And then he does, but it's like he's still in that headspace of, you're right. There's still a little bit of that Thor 1 arrogance.
Mm-hmm. I know. And like I said, he's almost the villain in this, like, in yeah. that way. You know, if you view it that way. In this, what do you call it, soul realm, this dreamlike yeah. state that he goes to when he snaps, my wife has always said she just wishes that when Banner snaps, Professor Hulk snaps in Endgame, uh-huh. that we would have seen one shot of her getting to see Nat in that soul realm. That's what Annika wishes always. I don't know the practical nature of if they could have pulled that off, but it's important that I add, I just don't know that we know the extent of what that vision he just saw was. Like, why was Gamora a child there?
Right.
Why were not other people there? Because I would love to, I like thinking about what would have Bruce seen in that moment, what would have Tony seen in that moment when yeah. they snapped, you know?
When, you know, they did film that Tony scene.
Yeah.
Which I'm glad they didn't show include.
It because it's terrible. Yeah. 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 But you know what I mean.
Well, so now we have our first dustings, which, I mean, to start with Cap losing Bucky after all that they've been through is hard.
The music plays such a key role in this film. We've talked about it so many times.
Right.
What I want people to also notice is how big of a role it plays when it's totally non-existent.
Yeah.
So this last 3 minutes of everybody, just disappearing and evaporating. All of them, there's not a single sound other than them whisking away, and there's no music. And silence can be powerful too. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's so intentional because we've had such epic scores, and now here we are in silence watching this all happen. And everyone's sitting at home thinking, Kyle, you're repeating yourself. I'll never forget where I was when this was happening. I couldn't believe I was witnessing this. And again, yeah. I know in the back of my head, I know it can't end this way. Somewhere right. deep down, I knew that. But I didn't think that at all. I thought it is ending this way. That's how I literally thought
yeah.
the first time I saw it. And then even when it cuts to Titan and Mantis says like something's happening, I thought, oh my gosh, it's showing. It's not just there either. It's everywhere. Yep. It's happening. And
And Tony's reaction there.
All these performances are notable. How everyone decided to get whisked away, you know, is crazy. All the difference, the subtle differences of everybody.
Like I love Peter Quill. Quill's
like terrified of it, kind of. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh, man. Yeah. And all of this, oh, we get this performance, sorry. Two things I want to point out here, too. That Doctor Strange points out earlier, you know, we're in the end game, and his last dying words were, there's no other way. And I love that, because he saw this. There was no other way. Like, this is it. And then I've read that this Spider-Man dusting was largely improv'd.
Yeah.
Now, he was supposed to get dusted, but how drawn out it is and like to die in Tony's hands was added. And the performance was so compelling between the two of them
that they had to keep it. And I think that's been the story of Tom Holland and Robert Downey Jr. all the way through, is their chemistry has just made that relationship so much more than I think it would have been on paper.
This is another one of those dustings that becomes so much more emotionally wrecking when you've done the homework of watching the MCU. Because this is Tony's fear. Like, he didn't want to lose. Every moment since he's met Spider-Man, he's been like his dad trying to keep him out of this.
Yep.
The argument on the spaceship is like, this is a one-way flight. Like, that's why I didn't want you here.
Right.
And this is his fear played out in front of him. He lost him.
And then this shot. Ugh.
Of them all just laying there post-snap. Best thing ever about this whole thing is people keep saying, Cap, what's happening? What's going on?
Right.
And Cap, all he says is, oh God. Like, he sits there forever.
Yep.
And the realization of him sitting on the ground, like all his hair messed up and realizing what's happening.
Oh. Well, and we have to think about the contrast between the way this movie's ending with the way Age of Ultron ended, where we had Vision now part of the team, and he was the strongest Avenger ever, and he was perfect and basically invincible. And now this is ending with Cap sitting above his corpse, his grayed out corpse.
Yes.
Of
Vision.
Then
it starts Porch, man, the song. It starts it right after he says that.
Man.
We've gone 3 minutes with no music, and I think that makes this... Oh my gosh, I can't even say it. I'm getting emotional. That's what makes this last thing so powerful.
This theme is just all time.
I just think this movie largely wouldn't have been as effective or successful or genius if it didn't end right here. It had to end on Thanos smirking, I think. This is the Empire Strikes Back of the MCU. It's just like, it was such a controversial ending because a lot of people thought they could have ended it earlier.
Yeah.
They could have ended it a little later. There was a lot of debate about where it was going to end. And to have it end on a smirk with a Picardy third, music nerd term, which means that it ends on the positive, and it makes you feel good for a second. That's how it ends, which is, again, Picardy thirds are meant to resolve things in music. That's what they're there for.
Right.
So to end it on that, are you kidding me? And then start this epic credit scene, depressing music. Just, I remember sitting in the theater in absolute stunned silence. My whole theater didn't move.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, what?
We've said this before, but I've never had a movie theater experience like I did with Infinity War. And I would include that when I'm talking about Endgame even. Like,
agreed.
There's just something about the way, it was such a bold choice and it worked so well.
Well, and Endgame, not to compare the two, because they're kind of one movie to me, and we're going to compare the two in a few weeks, but Endgame, we've talked about this before, had more, like, we knew it was the last one. We knew it was closing things up, so we were watching it almost more nervous, whereas this movie, I think I was going into it expecting just kind of like a fun Age of Ultron type story.
Right.
So my expectations were different, and so then for it to end this way was like, What? Like, just stunned, you know? Because I was like, there's another one? Wait, but they're all gone? Wait, what? You know, like, I remember being like, wrestling with all these thoughts.
This is also one of the movies where I would say watching the credits is so important, not even because of any after credit scene, but because of just how dramatic sitting in this theme is after
that. Yes, you have to sit in it.
And then you and I have always talked about how it wraps with this really sad piano version. yes, of the Avengers theme. And we're about to get it.
And also note that there is no mid-credit scene in this movie, which is very rare for Marvel. So you have to sit through the whole epic score to get the last scene, you know?
Right.
And just for our viewers now, we're in the credits. We're at 2 minutes and or 2 hours and 19 minutes, but we're going to hear this. We're going to hear this right here.
Here it is.
The sad piano theme. And the genius of Avengers Infinity War dusting away.
Dusting away.
Unbelievable. What a movie.
Wow.
The only thing I want to add before we kind of wrap this up is Hulk's trilogy is kind of fun to think about. I like it. And I know it's really controversial. But if you think about Ragnarok being this interesting idea of Hulk and Banner having like two fighting conflicting personalities, not one guy who turns mad, but there's actually like another being that can speak and have thoughts inside of Bruce, right?
Right.
And now in this movie, they're fighting so much that the other guy like won't come out.
Right, right.
It's a really bold choice, and I get it. It's different than what you're used to with Hulk, right? It's really different. But I just appreciate that tension, and I appreciate that Mark Ruffalo would have the guts to push for something bold like this for me.
Oh, I totally agree.
It's going to be even bolder when we get back and do this again for the next film.
Right.
But I've always kind of liked it. Maybe part of that's me talking myself into it, but I've always kind of liked it. So any other closing thoughts? This movie to me is just unbelievable. I love it. It's one of my favorite movies ever. I'll never forget where I was. It's virtually flawless. I am just continuously shocked at everything we just said for the last 3 hours. And yet the Rousseau brothers were able to dangle all of that stuff and juggle it all and make it work. All these pieces fit, all the characters fit, all the visuals fit, all the cuts fit. It all just works, even though it's got to be, as people would say online, one of the most ambitious crossovers in the history of cinema. Like, I just don't think we've ever had in cinema, dude. I'm not serious. I mean, I'm not kidding. I am serious. In the history of cinema, I don't think we've ever had Infinity War and Endgame. Just anything like it.
Oh, no. I just don't think ever. No, we just definitely haven't.
And it could have been such a fail, and it just was so opposite of a fail. So I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this movie in particular, like we've said before, had a massive job to do in a different way than what Endgame had to do. Like, they both had their challenges. I think Endgame had the burden, will have the burden, you know, when we watch it soon, of closing up a lot of storylines. But Infinity War had the burden of balancing all of these characters with different tones and different backgrounds and making it all flow together in a way that actually worked, like not just being throwing the toy box at the viewers and letting it just be like, oh, well, it's all of our favorite characters playing. Like, it's so much more than that. It's so, I think what's so impressive about this movie to me, and I know that maybe not everybody agrees, but I feel like it's so emotional, but so fun. And it's something that I think that the Russos and Marcus and McFeely learned a lot from Taika and from James Gunn with. Like, I feel like you see a lot of that kind of balance, like what you've talked about loving so much with Guardians 1, what I love so much with Ragnarok. I think that works really well here, but on such an epic level that I just can't imagine it being done any better. Like, this is one of those movies that I walked out of the theater and just was shell-shocked by how good it was. It was immediately my favorite Marvel movie of all time. It was like there was no debate in my mind. It's just, for me, for a Marvel fan, it's perfect. For a non-Marvel fan, I think that there are other, you know, like there are some arguments to be made that other movies would beat this out. But I don't know. I would be curious to talk to an MCU fan that doesn't love Infinity War.
Doesn't like it. If you were a fan of all the other movies we just rewatched and you liked a lot of them and, you know, you have favorites and stuff, but you just in general are a huge MCU fan, I would love to hear if you didn't like this, like, because I've never met a human being
right.
that was a fan that did not feel like this fulfilled what they were hoping, like a battle against Thanos. Like, again, they had been building up this battle over the Infinity Stones right. forever. Think about how much weight that would have to carry. And it lives up to it.
I just love that. As we're sitting in these credits and watching these go by and listening to this like very dark music.
Thank you, Graham Page. And thank you, Ben Wiggs. I'm so thankful for everyone of you.
We're stuck sitting, you know, and like you said last episode, sitting for a year in this failure. And it's part of why I didn't like Ant-Man and the Wasp coming out when it did, or Captain Marvel coming out when it did, because I didn't want any reprieve from that. Like, I like that you have to sit in this darkness. Yep. And if you look at each character and the way that each of our Avengers that we've seen prevail time and time again have failed in their own unique ways, and in ways that would be so devastating to each of them, right? Like, Tony couldn't outthink Thanos. He couldn't out-prepare Thanos. Like, Steve couldn't out-will Thanos. Thor couldn't out-strength.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, and the Hulk, the same, like the Hulk just failed.
Yep.
And it's like the Hulk is supposed to be the secret weapon. Again, like we said earlier. And it's like,
oh, they all failed.
So we're all just sitting there. And then like the reason I said that shot of Vision, who was at one point, you know, he lifted Thor's hammer. It was this idea that he was the strongest Avenger in a sense at that point. And to see him just broken and Steve sitting there, like you said, bloody, it's just such a such a bold storytelling move, and I love it.
I'll save a lot of my thoughts, obviously, for Endgame, but also just that makes that first interaction when Tony gets back to Earth with Steve even more powerful.
Yeah.
Because he says, I lost the kid, and then Cap's response is, Tony, like, we lost. Like, everybody lost. And Cap's trying to bring it back to we. But he's also right. saying, like, everybody lost. Like, it's the worst. It's just the worst right now. As we're coming up on the post-credit scene here, I also want to say, when we finished Thor Ragnarok, I had a couple different listeners send me links to, like, fun facts about Thor Ragnarok. You know, 21 uh-huh. facts that made it fun. And hold that thought, because I'm going to watch the post-credit scene here, and I'm going to talk about it, and then I'm going to get back to that.
Okay.
I thought this was also genius because it's the only post-credits scene we get, and I'm thankful yep. that it still lets us sit in the badness, that this right. doesn't really give you a huge glimpse at, like, New Hope, other than the one pager, which we now know what it means. But at the time, I didn't even know what yep. it meant. I had to Google it.
Right.
But I'm thankful that they didn't give us much to go on of what's Endgame going to be about.
Which I would say, this is the moment for me that I've been waiting for by putting Captain Marvel where we did in our watch order. Because I think that makes this pager moment way cooler, right? Because what you and I have been saying the whole time, every time we've done our saga so far, is Captain Marvel is off somewhere in the universe doing things, but we know that Nick Fury has this pager that he's yet to use. And so I love that now, finally, you know, that was the second movie ever in our rewatch, and we're coming back to this moment where he's finally calling it in, and we're going to see what that looks like. And it makes it a lot more exciting to me than okay, well, now we're going to have a Captain Marvel movie, and then we're going to go back to Endgame. So I also love that this is the first time we've seen Nick Fury or Maria Hill
right.
in Phase 3.
It's been a long time.
Like, we saw them in Age of Ultron, and that was the last time.
Well, it kind of makes sense to me because it's not like the Avengers told Nick Fury they're going to Wakanda, you know?
True, true.
It is a fun thing to have him there.
Yeah. Well, especially because, I mean, he's been such a core part of these Avengers movies, right?
Right.
Since the first one. But I do always wonder this line. We have multiple bogeys over Wakanda, same energy signature as New York, but 10 times bigger. I've always wondered, is that them just now realizing that there's an invasion over Wakanda. It's just taken them a while to get that intel, because it would seem like they would have gotten that a while before the snap is happening. Or is that referring to something else?
Well, okay. I think it's that it did take them a little bit to find out there was an invasion. But if you think about it, from the time the ships crash into Wakanda, it's not that long. It's long for us because it's cutting between Titan and whatever. But right. The fight itself, it doesn't look like it's like, you know, much more than an hour or two, right? That they're fighting, maybe
that's
maximum.
Fair. Yeah, on Wakanda. That's fair.
So it makes sense to me that they'd be a little delayed with the bogeys part of it. But I think the energy thing they're talking about is the actual snap. The stones being used is the energy source. That's why when he says, is it the same as New York? I don't think he's referring to the invasion. He's referring to the one stone, the space stone being used.
So you're talking about New York in the first Avengers film, not New York at the beginning of Infinity War.
I think they're talking about New York in the first Avengers, because there was an energy seek when they were doing that. And he's saying 10 times the size of that, because now it's all the stones actually snapping. I also think that makes more sense when you think about Endgame, and we can talk about it then, but how he says they partially find Thanos because the same energy sequence is found on another planet again. And when they get to Thanos, they say, where are the stones? We know you just used them because we saw that same energy thing. And he says, I used them to destroy him. He's not a liar, which is one of my favorite lines too. He's not a liar.
Right.
But you know what I mean? So I think he's referring to the energy that went off in Wakanda triggered something on Maria Hill's radar, which then she noticed there was multiple bogeys. Like, oh, by the way, there's tons of people there. But before they can even really process that, it's already been snapped. So they get like, what, 30 seconds to talk about it, and then they start disappearing. You know?
Yeah.
That's what I think.
I like that. I think that makes sense. I'm curious to look more into it. That definitely makes more sense to me than them just suddenly registering that the ships are there right as the snap's happening. Because I just feel like everything we know about Nick Fury, they'd be on top of it, you know?
That's fair. You sent me a Stan Lee quote online when he was interviewed, and maybe we can share this on our Instagram or Twitter, but he talked about when he wanted to make these superheroes, one of the best things he ever did, and me and you talked about why this is why Marvel has worked, is that he said, okay, I get that a lot of times these heroes can be unrelatable because you have this guy that can fly, or you have a guy that can shoot webs out of his hands or whatever, and it doesn't make sense and all that stuff. But what Stan Lee said is, if those were real things, if these were real people, what would their lives be like? What would they argue about? How would the rest of the world view them? All these things. And that is like perfectly shown to me in this post-credit scene. Obviously, people being dusted to a Soul Stone realm, right? It's not realistic. But I'm so bought in because Marvel does such an amazing job of showing me the practical side of this. Like a helicopter.
Yeah.
Because like, think about how many questions you could ask about this dusting. What if you were in the middle of flying a helicopter and you get dusted? Well, the helicopter would probably crash into the building and people panic, or cars would start crashing, or somebody was in the middle of, you know, whatever, surfing with a friend and one other person just disappears below the surfboard. I'm just making this up. My point is, what about all the people that were in school and they got dusted, right? So hence Spider-Man Far From Home. My point is, Marvel has done this better than anybody ever, and it's a little bit in part due to Stan Lee. And so we'll share this quote because it made me...
Oh, definitely.
It made me feel really good about this. What I wanted to say was, after we watched Thor Ragnarok, a couple listeners sent me like 21 facts you may have missed from Thor Ragnarok, and there was some interesting, crazy little details. For this Infinity War rewatch, Robbie and I did research. We've watched Infinity War a million times. We watched it live while recording this. But there's still things that we probably missed. And so I totally welcome people sending me things that would blow my mind.
Yeah.
Little fun facts. I watched the audio commentary, but there's little fun facts of the behind the scenes that if you find, let us know. Because it's fun for both of us to hear these things.
And if so, we would love to...
go or whatever.
Well, we would love to have a mailbag episode just for Infinity War, and maybe just for Endgame as well, because there's so much in these movies. So if you guys have questions, or if there are things that you've read that you think would be fun to discuss, we would love to.
Or that we just missed.
Yeah. We would love to dig into those.
So as always, hit us up on social media at the FFW Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast. Leave reviews. You can also email us via our website, theffwpodcast.com. And all of that feedback is welcomed. Guys, this has been really fun for Robbie and I. We're nearing the end of our season one, but as we release on our season two update, we have so much stuff to look forward to. This has just been so much fun. We can't wait to do more of it. So stay tuned. We're only halfway through Avenging April, and we still have to discuss Avengers Endgame next week.
Full circle.
So make sure you come full circle with us. Take this time to rewatch more movies if you need to get caught up, and let's discuss Avengers Endgame next week on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.